The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is December 12th, 2014, and today we have a new sponsor to Motivation and Muscle, Earth Pulse Sleep Systems. This is a sleep-on-command unit, and this is pulsed electromagnetics. It's a sleep machine. Performance enhancement, recovery, and longevity system. I've used this system now for 3 years. It does work. I would endorse this completely, or I don't have this gentleman. Paul Becker is the name who designed, is the gentleman who designed and markets this sleep system. So if you go out to www.motivationandmuscle.com, there's a banner right on the homepage. Click it, and it'll give you all the information that you need. And either Paul or I can be reached for it. So, as you know, our motto is we don't try, we succeed. And today is Friday, and we have Brooks Kubik on. And we got a great subject today we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about diet and nutrition. We're going to really go about it the way Brooks, I believe, wrote Knife, Fork, Muscle. And we're going to talk about, too, you know, the basic compound movements in with it. But the main thing is we're going to really get into, I guess we're going to knock down a lot of the fallacies about diet and nutrition and how a lot of stuff is just very skewed and you're wasting your money. So, Brooks, I hope I hit that on the sledgehammer to the anvil today. Welcome to the show. And, you know, give a little synopsis on the book and Dino Files, if you would, please.
Well, the book, Knife, Fork, Muscle, is printed. We have copies, and we are filling all orders within 24 hours once we receive them. Everyone who ordered during the pre-publication special should have received their book by now. If someone out there ordered during the pre-pub special and for any reason did not get their book, shoot me an email. We'll check the shipping records. We'll find out what's up. But the book's out. The book is getting terrific reviews. And literally from all around the world, we've got it on every continent other than Antarctica. And I am just waiting for a scientist or researcher or even a penguin to put in an order. So that would be good.
Yeah.
The Dino Files Quarterly has been a big hit. This is a full magazine or journal size publication. I think there are 13 or 14 articles. I think 13.
Yeah, there's 13.
Okay, and lots of good training advice, a good mix of old school material and new material. And the thing that I like about this is that, you know, this is like Perry Rader's old Iron Man, like Bob Hoffman's old Strength and Health. It's reader oriented, and it focuses on readers, focuses on real people and what real people are doing and what works for real people. And this is in contrast to the focus on, quote, the champions, close quote, that you see in all of the muscle magazines and all of the muscle media. You know, it's all focused on a very select few who are held up as essentially idols to be worshipped. You may remember when Joe Weider was doing this and he created a pantheon of the gods. He had Mount Olympus with all of the Weider bodybuilders on Mount Olympus, and there was Joe Weider as Zeus, the king of the gods. You know, it's fairy tale stuff. It's fantasy stuff. It, quite frankly, is stuff that is written for and appeals to 14, 15, 16-year-old boys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame that fantasy has become training and diet and nutrition reality for so many people. You know, there are so many people who only focus on the champions. They don't focus on their own training, but, you know, they know all the gossip.
Yep.
They know all the backstories about everything, and they know all the inside scoop, but they don't know how to train.
Nope.
And they don't know what to eat, and they waste their money on food supplements. Many of them often go down the drug trail, which is always a mistake. Mm-hmm. And they get nowhere, and that's a shame. And so the Dinosaur Files is a quarterly magazine or quarterly journal, hard copy, and it's devoted to real people and what works for real people. And quite frankly, it's really one of a kind. And it's
Without a doubt. And, you know, it speaks to the masses, period. That's what it does. If you are interested in training fundamentals, especially, and you know, Brooks has got a mix of some of the older stuff in there with some current writers that have written their own. I mean, it's you really get to go through the alphabet on it. And we know as more of these come down the road, you know, you're going to enjoy the subject matter even more. And you know, it gives you something. Look, I've talked about this since Brooks has come on this podcast. You know, with dinosaur training, how many times I refer to that. That's no bull. I mean, I like to go back and reread. So, you know, I hope with what Brooks is doing and what we're doing here, if we can spread this all over the world, and I mean, just keep beating it into your head until you finally get it, and you tell 10 other people, we've done our job. And that's the idea here, because like I said to Brooks last week, now suddenly I hear the words physical culture popping up with a lot of different people that you didn't hear. So obviously the message is starting to get out there, and maybe it's even resonating. But, you know, and this is going to go, and then we're going to start up with the diet and nutrition part of the show here. But I want to tell you something. You know, you want to talk about real-world training, and I'm going to tell you the other night. We had a snowstorm here for a couple days here in upstate New York, and we got about anywhere between 9 and 12 inches. But it was just a mix of everything. And then finally it settled on snow, but it was very heavy and wet. And I was scheduled to go out Wednesday night and train. And I could have been like just punked out and said, you know what? It's really bad out. I don't feel like going outside because I had to do some outside stuff. And obviously it was not as cold as I figured. I was not going to run heat. So I went out because I felt that I had to do that. It was just something I needed to do mentally and physically to get out in that cold. And, you know, I do a lot of my warming up outside. It was snowing, the whole deal. I'm here to tell you, just like all the stuff that you read in Dinosaur Files, it's no bullshit, because I was out in that stuff. And I'll tell you what, I had a workout that was like second to none. It was the idea of being out in the cold, being out in the elements. And then, you know, in and out of the garage, I squatted that night. I dead stop squatted 605 for three singles. I had a blast. I was warm enough, but yet I still had a little bit of chill in my bones. And I got to tell you, if you can go out and do stuff like that and make gains, you're ahead of the game. You don't need to go read Joe Weider or the new muscle and fitness and all that other crap. Get out there and figure out your own. We got into this last week with the Perry Rader article. You should go back when I'm going to put that show up very shortly. It refers to the whole thing. You can go out and learn whatever you need to learn, but it's your responsibility to figure it out. Well, I figured a lot of it out, and I'm here to tell you it's well worth your time. So, Brooks, let's get into diet nutrition, obviously. We can talk about if you want to get into the basic movements, obviously, to go along with it. But let's get right into this, and being that you've got knife, fork, and muscle out, I mean, what better time than let's hit upon the subject?
Okay. Well, you had wanted to do a show about building Herculean muscle mass.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, that's got different components to it. One is the exercise or training component. We've talked about that on other shows, and we'll talk about it again on future shows. The mental aspects play an important part. Again, we've covered those, and we'll continue to cover them. But obviously, diet and nutrition also plays an important part in any mass building program. And indeed, in any training program at all, because even if you're not trying to add additional muscle mass, you need to repair the damage that you do to your body in a workout. You know, in a workout, your muscles are chains of cells, muscle fibers attached to each other. And in a hard, heavy workout, you actually rip those chains, those fibers apart. You tear them. You destroy them. And you need to rebuild them and rebuild the glue that holds them together. And you do that with your diet and nutrition. Now, that's pretty easy to say, and it's pretty easy to understand. The problem is that since about the 1950s, when weightlifting, weight training, bodybuilding kind of started to jump the shark, you had many, many more people start to get interested in it. That's when the Weider magazines took off, which had a much more sensationalistic approach than previous publications. It's when food supplements came out. The 50s are when steroids started to hit. And things started to change. And one thing that happened in the 60s was you started to have virtually everybody, and I'm including people that I have little respect for and people that I have a great deal of respect for. Perry Rader, for example, is someone whom I have tremendous respect for, and he's someone who started talking about and writing about and promoting the kind of thing that I'm going to get to in a minute that I don't think is a very good idea. So for listeners, I don't want people to be confused. I don't want this so-and-so liked this. You speak highly of those people. That's absolutely right. But you can speak highly of someone and you can respect them and you don't have to agree with everything that they do. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a democracy of the mind, if you will, as opposed to a dictatorship of the mind.
Yep.
Got a question the other day from a guy who was doing the old York barbell courses, which are wonderful courses, particularly for beginners. And he said that his shoulders hurt when he does bench presses. He's a man in his 50s or 60s. His shoulders hurt when he does bench presses, but they're an exercise in the course. Should he keep doing them? You know, and the answer was, I don't care if they're in the course or not. If they hurt you, don't do them. And similarly, I don't think the press behind neck is a particularly good exercise. I think it's very difficult for most trainees, particularly most older trainees, and can lead to very severe shoulder problems. So I would suggest doing military presses or doing dumbbell presses as opposed to the press behind neck. So someone might say, but Brooks, the press behind neck is one of the exercises in York course number 2. And I say, I know that, but that doesn't mean that we have to do it. You know, back in the days when they were writing the York courses, people were also doing things like barbell leg presses, where you lie on your back and you put a barbell on the soles of your feet and you leg press it. Or you do a one-legged barbell leg press. Now, Eric, I've done a lot of foolish things in my life. You know, and I like to think I'm man enough to admit to them, and I usually do.
Yep.
But I've never done anything as crazy as put a heavy barbell on my right foot while I'm lying down and start doing leg presses.
No.
You know, because there's just too much that can go wrong. And here's the other thing. It doesn't do very much for you.
No.
It's not a very good exercise. You know, think about it. You can do a one-legged squat with your own body weight. I doubt you're ever going to be able to put that much on a barbell on your foot.
No.
So why do it? You know, so I say that just so that people are not confused, because what I say is going to run counter to a lot of conventional wisdom.
Yeah, but Brooks, you're being sensible, though, too. All right? I mean, if you know something can hurt you, I know maybe the temptation is to try it out, but you're not going to get any gains with having a barbell on the soles of your feet and pushing it up. It might look good for everybody if you can do it, but if that thing rolls off and hits you in the face, you're dead.
Yeah.
Basically. So,
yeah, and you know, it's like the dumb stuff that guys do to post on YouTube. You know, it's like, fine, wonderful. Gee, it's funny to see what an idiot you are. Or maybe it's not so funny. Yeah. You know, but that doesn't constitute training advice.
No.
You know, so anyhow, you know, getting to the diet thing. Everybody thinks that they have to go on some kind of super diet in order to gain muscle mass or in order to gain strength or even in order to lift weights. Mm-hmm. And that's thinking that really goes back to the 40s and 50s, really took off in the 50s. And I'm here to tell you that that's a mistake. And let me give you some specific examples that, to my mind, make no more sense than putting a barbell on your foot and trying to do a one-legged barbell leg press. So here's an actual book written by a very famous author. This came out in the late 60s, early 70s. It is not Bradley J. Steiner, who I often talk about and respect. It's someone else, someone who has a huge following and someone who, you know, I like a lot of his ideas. But listen to this. In order to gain weight, you need a special weight-gaining drink. 1 pint of your favorite ice cream. Well, ice cream is basically a form of candy for children. Mm-hmm. 1 pint of your favorite ice cream. 1/2 pint of heavy cream. 1/2 pint of light cream. Leaving aside that many people, if they tried to drink that much cream in a concoction, would be making a dash for the bathroom in about 30 seconds.
Yep.
6 to 8 raw eggs. Once again, I know it's a classic scene from the first Rocky movie. We all know that. But raw eggs can cause salmonella poisoning. Yep. And before you say, well, you know, if you have to worry about salmonella poisoning, give up on the whole weightlifting thing because you're a wimp. If you have ever had food poisoning, you know that it's nothing to take lightly. I had a case of severe food poisoning once. I lost 27 pounds in 24 hours.
I remember reading that years ago.
Okay. I mean, it's not a good thing. And sometimes it can affect you for the rest of your life. You can never bounce back. Food poisoning, salmonella poisoning can also kill you. And I guarantee there's nothing worse for your training than being dead.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, so then you're supposed to add to this mix 3 packages of Knox gelatin. Now, if you've ever tried to make anything out of gelatin or Jell-O, you know that you have to mix it up in hot water.
Yep.
In fact, boiling hot water to dissolve it. And if you don't do that and you try to mix it in something liquid, and I know because I was foolish enough to try to do this when I was a kid.
I've done it too.
You end up, a lot of guys have, it used to be a big thing. You end up with something that is just these big clumps of gooey, cartilaginous material that tastes and looks incredibly foul.
And you probably don't digest it either, to be honest with you.
No, and it's not, you know, it's not even a high quality protein. It's a second or third quality protein. It's yep. not usable by the human body. So you're torturing yourself to no good end. Well, then you add 4 tablespoons of peanut butter, 1 tablespoon of honey, 1 cup powdered skim milk, mix it in a blender, chill. And of course, when you chill, the gelatin is going to clump all the more.
Yep.
And you drink it, supposedly. Okay, now, I'm here to tell you that if I tried to drink that, I would be sick for about a week.
Yep.
And I have tried when I was a kid. I tried these super weight-gaining drinks, and I was sick for a week, literally.
Yeah, we used to do that too, Brooks. We used to put them in thermoses
yep.
and carry them around, and it got so bad. This guy that I knew that had – he worked in a health food store – there is this liquid protein in a can. I don't know if you ever tried, but when I tell you, it's pretty fun. Well, it is funny, but it isn't. We, you know, it was like we used to have to ride our bikes to the gym. I mean, we were like into this stuff so bad. Well, we start driving, right? So they sell this stuff. It's pretty cheap in a can, and I don't remember. It might have been 15 grams of protein, but it was like, you know, you get all the bull on the can where it assimilates right away, and you know, you got the muscle charged arms and all that. Well, we started drinking this crap on the way to like training, and it was funny. We throw the cans in the back of this old car I had, and we wouldn't even get halfway there. And you know that sound when your stomach starts to gurgle?
Yep.
Guess what? It was like you had to pull over and run in the woods, man. So it was like, that that cheap stuff that was supposed to be so good, well, I learned, let me put it this way, about 5 of us learned the hard way.
And every time I write about this on the Dinosaur Training blog, every time I cover it in the Dinosaur Files,
yep.
every time I send an email blast to the people who've signed up for my daily email tips at my website, I always get exactly the same kind of story from the guys who are like, oh, my God, let me tell you what I did. I did a story about a famous bodybuilder from the 70s, early 80s, who supposedly had the famous foul protein drink
yep.
made out of tuna fish.
Oh,
tuna
yeah.
fish and water.
Yeah.
And you were supposed to mix it in a blender and drink it. And guys around the world read about this and tried to drink it, and they got incredibly sick. And I wrote about that. And one of the guys my age, 56, 57-ish, shoots me an email. He says that he recalls reading about another top bodybuilder who, according to one of the muscle comics, would drink grape juice
yep.
and tuna fish mixed.
Oh.
So he wanted to look like this top bodybuilding champion, so he ran to the store, he got a can of tuna fish, he got some grape juice, mixed them up, chugged it, and like 30 seconds later, he's barfing his guts out.
Oh, yeah.
And I really hope that no one is listening to this show while they're eating. Because the history of physical culture and diet and nutrition involves a whole lot of people eating stuff that makes them sick.
Yep.
So, let me jump to an important related topic, and then I'm going to go back to, again, the conventional advice out of an actual book that I'm holding here in my hand from someone who is highly regarded, widely respected, and a lot of people follow what he writes, and let's just go through it. So here's the point. 8 foods are responsible for 90% of all food allergies. And food allergies and food sensitivities and intolerances are much more common than people think, and they affect you in ways that we are only now beginning to understand. People are starting to link food intolerances, food allergies, food sensitivities to diabetes, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, cardiovascular disease, arthritis, rheumatism, autism in children, all kinds of problems. Attention deficit disorder, Tourette's syndrome. And some physicians have achieved seemingly miraculous cures, not with drugs, not with treatment, not with therapy, with dietary changes, particularly eliminating the common allergens. Now, the common allergens in the human diet, the eight that are responsible for 90% of food allergies and intolerances, eggs, milk, wheat, and that's not even a gluten issue, although some people are so sensitive to gluten that it literally will over time kill them. It will cause their bodies to virtually die from the inside out as the result of celiac disease eating away at the inside of the body, literally causing holes in the intestines. Can you think of that? Can you imagine that for a second?
Yeah, how's that?
Yeah, that's not a really good thing, okay? Soy.
Oh, man killer.
Absolutely. Peanuts, tree nuts,
yep.
Fish, and shellfish. And I'm just going to mention, a lot of people have issues with corn.
Yeah.
And corn is probably in the top 10 or 12. It just didn't make the top 8. Mm-hmm. And corn is in almost everything nowadays if you eat refined and processed foods. Very hard to avoid. In fact, if you eat refined and processed foods, you cannot avoid any of the things I just laid out other than the fish and the shellfish.
You know, Brooks, that's one thing that bothers the hell out of me. And I don't know. I know it's really cheap, but I've got another. I don't want to be a conspirator here, but that soy, you know, it doesn't matter what it is now. It's in every single thing, it seems like. And I'm like, holy cow. You know, it's like it came out of like nowhere. I know it was very prevalent in the 70s. And I mean, I don't want to detract from the show here at all, but it does lend itself to, I can remember reading things even today where now doctors are saying that was the worst thing you could have done to males, because a lot of the males never developed their manhood, so to speak, the way it should have been, and it's caused a lot. They feel it's caused a lot of feminism in men too. I tell people, you know, one thing I'd like to say before we go back is this: read your packaging for sure. And another thing that bothers me too is you always get this little almost disclaimer on the bottom of stuff if you're eating any of that, because I like to read labeling. You know, made in a factory where it could be like milk or soy products or this or that. And I'm like, oh, my God, man. You know, it's a scary thing of what they're using now in food.
Well, going to the soy estrogen issue just a second. One of the first commercial uses for soybeans, which basically were a junk vegetable that was only used by poor farmers who couldn't afford better grains to feed their livestock. I mean, that's how soy originated. But soy was actually used to make synthetic estrogen for HRT for women who were going through menopause.
Yep.
I mean, that's the estrogen level in soy. And used to see a lot about this. There was a huge pushback, I assume, from commercial interests. I don't know that, but I assume, since commercial interests seem to be behind pretty much everything.
Yep.
But there was a huge pushback on that. You don't see as much about it, but I'll tell you what, I don't go near the stuff, and I never will. But go back to that weight gain drink.
Yeah.
Okay, you were supposed to mix together 6 to 8 raw eggs, skim milk powder and cream and half and half, and peanut butter. So you've got 4 of the 8 top allergens mixed together in concentrated form in a drink.
Yeah.
Well, what that means is if you have a little bit of sensitivity to any of those, and more people do than we now know, and we are only now beginning to learn the extent of this. If you have any kind of sensitivity to any of those, and you mix them together into this big drink, and you start slugging it down, 1 or 2 quarts of it a day, the odds are very good that you're going to trigger a really severe allergy to one or more of those items. Mm-hmm. And something that used to be a little bit of a problem when you had the food occasionally, you're taking large amounts of it every day, bang, you've got problems. I myself have very severe allergies and very severe food allergies. And I have had these since I was a little kid. When I was a little kid, I was diagnosed with allergies, and I started to get allergy shots. And I got allergy shots twice a week, every week, from age 8 or 9, I think it was age 8, until I graduated from high school. That's a lot of allergy shots.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, serious stuff. And I've had these problems ever since. The interesting thing is that I never had one of my doctors focus on foods and foods to avoid. Mm-hmm. Okay, so anyhow, that drink could be a disaster, and I mean a real disaster, for a whole lot of people. Well, so could some of the other advice for weight gaining. Eat an egg every hour. Okay, well, that's a relatively inexpensive form of high-quality protein. You get 6 to 8 grams of protein, depending on the size of the egg. And you don't have to eat it raw. You can cook it, hard-boiled, soft-boiled, whatever. Okay, so sounds good. But what happens if by doing that over the course of a couple of weeks, you set off an egg intolerance, an egg allergy that then lasts for the rest of your life,
mm-hmm.
and now you can't eat eggs anymore? That's probably not a good idea. Or what about the famous gallon of milk a day to gain weight? Well, okay, sounds wonderful, but you know what? Many people over the age of 25 cannot digest milk to begin with. We just went through, milk is one of the top 8 most allergenic foods. So what are you doing slamming down a gallon of it every day? That is inviting some serious problems. Similarly, now let's go back to the book and the weight gaining advice. Here's your weight gaining breakfast. 6 scrambled eggs, 4 to 5 slices of whole wheat toast. That's that, quote, healthy, close quote, whole wheat toast.
Yep.
And of course, if you have a wheat issue, it doesn't matter if it's whole wheat, cracked wheat, stone ground, white bread. It's all the same. Mm-hmm. And the gluten content can actually be higher in whole wheat and whole grain products than otherwise. 3 cooked sausages, 2 glasses of whole milk with powdered milk added for extra protein, 1 glass of fruit juice, 1 banana or apple. Okay, I've got an appetite that scares people, particularly when I'm in really hard training. You go out to the garage, you lift heavy, you come inside, and you are ready to inhale food, particularly protein. But I could never eat that much. I would never try. Lunch. 2 or 3 sandwiches on whole wheat bread using meat, fish, or cheese. Plus 1 small can of tuna fish. Plus 1 quart of milk. Plus 2 or 3 pieces of fresh fruit. For dinner, 1 pound of your favorite meat or fish. 1 cup of a yellow vegetable, 1 cup of a green vegetable, 2 or 3 baked or mashed potatoes, And just to make sure you have your carb count high enough, 3 or 4 slices of whole wheat bread. On top of that, 2 glasses of whole milk, again, with powdered milk added, 1 dish of ice cream with chopped fruit, and that's your basic weight-gaining diet. And I'm telling you, if you tried to eat like that, you would make your, unless you have the best digestive system and the best metabolism of any human being, any grizzly bear, any Bengal tiger, and any Tyrannosaurus rex that has ever lived, you're not going to be able to digest that amount of food. And let me throw out a very simple thought. If you want to gain weight, strength, and muscle mass, you need to do hard, heavy training. You need to do squats, deadlifts, heavy exercises. And very bluntly, it's really, really hard to do heavy squats, heavy deadlifts, or anything heavy if your guts are rolling around and you're looking frantically for the nearest men's room. And you know, that is a part of diet and nutritional reality that most people never talk about. Okay, now here's something else. The same daily diet that I mentioned? Well, you have to make sure that you get enough vitamins, and B vitamins are responsible for building tissue. And so everyone always says, if you're trying to gain weight, make sure you have a lot of B vitamins. So in addition to all the food that I just laid out, you're also supposed to have 3 times a day with every meal, 2 high potency B complex tablets, and 10 brewer's yeast tablets. Okay. Brewer's yeast is an incredibly allergenic food item. A lot of people are allergic to yeast. It's basically a mold. If you're allergic to mold, and many people are, the odds are very good that you're also allergic to yeast. I'm allergic to brewer's yeast. I've known that since I was age 8 or 9, whenever I had my first set of allergy tests. That's one of the things that I came back as allergic to, brewer's yeast. Well, guess what? A couple of years later, reading the muscle magazines, caught up in a desire to gain strength and muscle and look like Mr. America and go to Muscle Beach and meet Betty Weeder when she was wearing her leopard skin bikini and, you know, all that stuff, all of the teenage fantasies that we had. I started buying all the vitamins and all the food supplements and all the everything that they had, and I forgot all about this brewer's yeast thing. So I bought brewer's yeast tablets and I bought brewer's yeast powder, and I took the tablets and I mixed the powder into protein shakes. And Eric, I'm here to tell you that if you've got an allergy to something like that,
yep,
it will hit you so fast you can't believe how fast it hits you, and it'll hit you hard. And that's what happened to me. And so I'm looking at this weight gaining diet with these brewer's yeast tablets, and I'm thinking, this could make so many people so sick. Whoa. So, you know, what I'm trying to emphasize, and, you know, no disrespect, I know it sounds harsh, but no disrespect to the people who put these diets out there for so long with the best of intentions. And these are not people who are selling anything or selling food supplements. They're just trying to give advice, the best advice of their era, which we now know is wrong, and which, if we think about in a logical, rational manner, as opposed to the fantasy world of the muscle magazine, you know, we just shake our heads.
No, you know, and I think too, like you said, you know, at that time, that era, I think that was, you know, every, you know, I remember reading all this stuff, you know, Bruce Randall, you remember he drank gallons of milk. He'd be over, I think he was close to like 400 pounds,
yep,
lifting huge things. And he trimmed down to like 210, 220, going to bodybuilding show, et cetera, all that. And I can remember, you know, the older guys, when we used to go to the Y and the old steel pier, you know, you'd see these guys guzzling milk. And I mean, I did it too. I mean, and you know, you did it too. And everybody else probably did. You know what it is? This is my philosophy a lot of it. At the time, and we used to always laugh kind of, but it's true. When, you know, I mean, you've been training longer than I have, but I've been training long enough to be able to say this. We always had this kind of philosophy, and as twisted as this might sound, we would say we'd eat shit to get big, basically. That was always like the objective with us. It was like bigger and stronger, you know. And it falls back once again, you know, we're looking at all these guys that are gigantic. And let's face it, you know, most of them were on Dianabol. I mean, you know, you look at the guys in the 60s and 70s. I'm not even going into the 80s. You know, you looked at guys like Colombo and Arnold and Sergio Oliva and any of these big, massive men. You know, maybe over the winter they're smoothing out because maybe they're not on as much and this and that. But, you know, now we find out today, especially with, you know, I mean, I've changed a lot of things. I still do drink milk. I drink raw milk when I drink it. It's not all the time. And I like kefir at times, and I do like I'm not going to give them a plug where to get it, but there's a skyr that I ate when I was out in Iceland that is like part of their whole culture where I can get it, and it's the same stuff I ate out there. But I did the same thing like you. You know, you're looking for ways, and you're eating pints of ice cream, and you can't understand why you're in the bathroom, and you can't understand why you're putting weight on in the wrong spots when you're doing everything you feel is right. And really, it's not the way to do it. It's not, and if you want to last in the sport too, it's not a good thing. I mean, when you're talking about the amount of just sugar and everything in that diet there, I mean, if you have a propensity in your family to have diabetes, you do that for 10 years, maybe even less, and next thing you know, you got sugar problems. You know, and they're going to, and, you know, it could result in high blood pressure and things like that. So I totally get, it's a funny thing. It's like a two-edged sword, you know. You're looking for ways to get bigger. You're looking at these champs and they're telling you to do this, and you do it. But now we know now it was not the way to do it, not correctly at least.
That's absolutely right. And yeah, it's compounded for many really skinny, underweight beginners. You know, the typical hard gainer. So here's something that John Grimmick wrote about at least beginning back in the 40s, possibly even earlier. And he continued to write about it basically into the 50s, 60s, 70s. And it's something that I've never seen anyone else write about. And remember, John Grimmick, Mr. America, United States National Weightlifting Champion in the heavyweight class, one of the strongest men in the entire world in his era, certainly the best developed man of his era.
Mm-hmm.
Many believe he was the greatest all-natural bodybuilder of all time. This is someone that straddled the world of the old-timers and the world of modern bodybuilding. And he understood real training in real physical culture. Mm-hmm. Grimmick believed that it was a mistake. Let me repeat that. A mistake for a skinny, scrawny, underweight kid or young man or young woman to try to gain weight by drinking a lot of milk, eating six meals a day, or going on some kind of force-feeding diet program, similar to what I just read.
Yep.
And here's what Grimmick said. He said that one of the problems that that kind of individual typically has is that they are nervous and high-strung. Mm-hmm. They burn a lot of energy because they're always jittery. They're always in a hurry. They're always frantic about something. What they need to do, said Grimmick, is to calm down mm-hmm. and to start to take things easier. And when they learn to do that, he said, their bodies will automatically start to better digest and assimilate their food. Their appetite will improve. And in combination with regular sensible strength training, they will start to grow stronger, bigger, and more muscular. You can't force it. It has to happen naturally. And if you just let it happen, said Grimmick, everything will take care of itself. You'll start to add the strength and muscle mass that you desire. On the other hand, if you go on some kind of force-feeding program and you're already a nervous, high-strung type who worries and frets about everything, well, what's going to happen when your stomach is gurgling with a bunch of stuff sloshing around inside? You're feeling bad. You're wondering if you're sick or if you're going to be sick. You know, how in the world can that be good for the beginner that Grimmick is talking about? The kind of person who really needs to reduce worries and concerns and not add to them. And Grimmick's advice to me is just absolutely light years ahead of its time. I mean, he was looking at a connection between the gut and the brain, mm-hmm. which researchers, and he was seeing that very clearly and seeing how the one affects the other. Brain affects gut, gut affects brain. Both of them affect your ability to digest and assimilate and metabolize your food. And he's looking at that, and he's seeing the connection back in the 30s and 40s. And he was not even a scientist or a researcher.
No, but he had common sense, Brooks. Okay? And how many times do we get into this with the basics and the common sense approach to everything? The guy just had an innate ability to decipher what was going on. And, you know, I think for one thing, you know, especially you, I, and a lot of the guys and gals out there, we do real world stuff. You know, we're in conditions that aren't controlled by environment, so to speak. I'm talking where by a thermostat maybe or those around you. You train alone. I train alone. A lot of people do. We make our own choices. And I think like Grimmick, even though he was with some great people and he trained with some great people, I think he had the ability to figure things out. You know, we got into this again last week with the Perry Rader article. Once again, I'm going to sound like a parrot all the time here because it's important. And repeat and repeat. And the thing is, once again, take what you can learn and come up with your own formula. And this is why we can refer back to John Grimmick so many times because what he says is sage. You, like you said, you don't have to agree with everybody you admire. But, boy, this guy could hit the mark. I could say 9 times out of 10 easily. I'll never say anybody 10 out of 10. But he was probably, you look at through physical culture, I mean, this guy was spot on.
Well, he absolutely was. And
yeah.
I think that he had a tremendous insight, and it's really interesting because nobody would think of John Grimmick as a hard gainer.
No.
A hard gainer, small bones, hard to put on strength and muscle. I mean, you know, Grimmick was very thickly developed.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps not when he began training, but as a result of his training. I mean, he increased bone, tendon, ligament size and strength, muscle mass, of course, off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, he diagnosed the hard gainer condition in a way that no one else, to my knowledge, has ever done. And I really think that he was onto something, and I'm going to throw this out.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the vast majority of underweight beginners, and probably the vast majority of people who are coming to strength training, bodybuilding, weightlifting, physical culture because of illness or a physical condition that makes them feel subpar,
mm-hmm.
be it they're too skinny, they're too heavy and it's the wrong kind of weight, they're not in good shape, they're not strong, whatever. I believe that in all of those cases, there is a huge dietary component. And just for example, very simple example, think of it this way. If you have someone who is skinny and scrawny and thin,
mm-hmm.
there is a reason that that person is skinny and scrawny and thin. They either don't eat enough or they don't digest and metabolize and assimilate their food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why might someone not eat enough? Well, one reason might be their stomach always hurts. Why might someone not be able to digest and assimilate their food? Because they might have food allergies, food intolerances, food sensitivities in play. And of course, that's going to make your stomach hurt. So if you have someone that has trouble on whatever diet they've grown up eating, you know, let's say you have someone who has difficulty with milk and wheat. They've never been tested for food allergies. No one's ever thought of that. And it's amazing, by the way, that most doctors never consider this when it ought to be one of the very first things that they consider for almost any patient with any illness. You have someone who grows up, milk is causing them problems, cheese is causing them problems, ice cream is causing them problems, wheat, be it in breakfast cereal, be it in bread, be it in muffins, rolls, donuts, cookies, crackers, pasta, causes them problems. But they don't know it. And neither do their family members, neither do their friends. And so every day they eat a lot of food that upsets their stomach, plays havoc with their intestines, and possibly sets off a chain of inflammation throughout the entire body.
Mm-hmm.
If that happens over the course of a person's life, they end up as a teenager or a young adult, inevitably skinny, scrawny, underweight, and not very strong. So a possible theory as to why some people have a lot of trouble in gaining strength and muscle mass goes beyond the fact that they may be small boned. It may be that they also have some food allergy, food intolerance, food sensitivity issues going on. And if that's the case, and they start training, and the diet advice that they get is load up on all of these extremely potentially allergenic foods, eggs, milk, wheat, soy, peanuts, tree nuts to some degree, not as much, but the others are you know, common weight-gaining diet components. Mm-hmm. And compound the problem by drinking a lot of concentrated food supplements. And think about it. Your food supplements, your protein powders are made out of what? Milk,
eggs, soy.
Soy, if you are foolish enough to use a soy-based protein powder, and I hope that no one is, but I know they are.
And they use that pea powder now, too, Brooks. That's a big one. I mean, God. Jeez.
Yeah, and you know, peas and beans and legumes are very difficult, in fact, impossible for some of us to digest.
Yep.
And so a pea-based protein powder is going to cause serious problems for a lot of people. Similarly, if you have a pre-workout optimizer, energizer, a post-workout recovery drink, it probably is going to have a lot of high fructose corn syrup. It may have wheat or wheat derivatives. Corn.
It's going to have dyes in it.
Pardon?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. It's going to have dyes in it. Be very careful.
Yep.
Read about the dyes you're ingesting.
Absolutely. And you're taking it in concentrated form.
Yeah.
You know, it's like taking that skim milk powder and adding skim milk powder to your milk.
Yep.
Well, okay, I know why people do that, because skim milk powder is a cheap source of protein.
Yep.
But if you have any kind of difficulty with dairy products, you are literally pouring gasoline on the fire when you add skim milk powder to milk or cream. And it's even worse if it is a milk-based protein powder.
Definitely.
Which is most of the higher grade protein powders on the market. You know, they used to call these things food concentrates. I first read that term in a course that Reg Park wrote in the 1950s.
So protein was called a food concentrate. That's how they marketed it, pretty much?
Protein supplements, any kind of supplement,
really?
Was referred to as a food concentrate.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and it really sums it up. And Reg Park considered vitamin mineral tablets, protein powder, wheat germ oil to be food concentrates.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a good way of looking at it. But again, the problem becomes if something disagrees with you, taking it in concentrated form only makes it worse. Simple example from my own life. I am allergic to brewer's yeast, which is used in many kinds of food. When I was a kid, if I ate bread, which was made with brewer's yeast, it did not have an immediate knock me flat on my back effect. Mm-hmm. It probably was bad for me. I probably would have been a lot better off on a wheat-free, bread-free, cereal-free diet as a child. Mm-hmm. And given my history of food allergies, my doctors should have suggested that, but never did. However, that was a long time ago. We will let bygones be bygones. That doesn't mean that anyone listening to the broadcast has to continue to eat something that's a problem for them, or continue to work with a doctor who doesn't consider these issues, or not raise these issues with your doctor, which is what you need to do, of course, if you think there's a problem. And certainly if you have children, you need to be looking at your child's nutrition and things that might be causing problems for your child. And again, you need, you know, these are medical issues, so you need to work with a qualified medical professional. But leaving all that aside, bread didn't knock me flat on my back. But when I took concentrated brewer's yeast, a spoonful of it in a protein shake,
yep,
I, you know, I was violently sick almost immediately. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference between a food that causes problems and a concentrated source of that food or a food concentrate. So, you know, virtually all of the conventional advice for me as a teenager and young man trying to gain strength and muscle, virtually all of that advice was wrong.
Right.
I thought it was right. I tried it over and over. And I mean, it's amazing how many times I made the same kind of mistake over and over and over. And I'm sure that that's the case with many people. It's human nature. It's very unfortunate.
Yeah. And as you know, it can create quite a miserable life for you, especially when you don't have the answers. And if you're not going to be vigilant and going out and looking for the answers, you're going to have a very unhappy life, and you might have a very shortened life to go with it. So it's definitely something that if you're not sure about, you should definitely check into. And, you know, just don't go with the theory of, well, everybody else feels that way, so, you know, I'll just live with it. You know, I mean, it's not the way to live. You know, I'll bring it up again. Take the responsibility and go out and find out some of the answers you need for yourself. It's vital. It's vital to your existence. And not only that, I mean, especially with everybody that, you know, is in this audience with physical culture, and, you know, we all love to sling iron around. What fun is it going to be if you're just breaking down or you're not making any gains? I mean, that's the whole purpose of it, to get stronger mentally and physically and, you know, bolster up your spirituality too. I mean, I don't know, pearls of wisdom here today, as we always have here on Friday.
Have you ever heard of the book Grain Brain?
No, I haven't.
Well, Grain Brain is written by a neurosurgeon named Dr. David Perlmutter.
Okay.
Pearl, P-E-R-L-M-U-T-T-E-R, Perlmutter.
Yeah, I'm going to...
Real interesting book.
Okay.
Highly recommend it. It, you know, deals with gluten and refined carbohydrates and their effect on your, and it's not a good effect, on your body.
No.
And on your brain. And in it, I was just rereading it today.
Yep.
He has a list of some of the conditions that he believes are linked in many cases to diet and nutrition, and particularly to gluten and refined carbohydrates in the diet.
Yep.
ADHD. Mm-hmm. Anxiety and chronic stress, chronic headaches, depression, focus and concentration problems, insomnia, mood disorders, memory problems, cognitive impairment that may be a precursor to Alzheimer's.
Yep.
And of course, many physical problems such as diabetes, overweight and obesity, inflammatory conditions, arthritis, intestinal problems, and so on. But that list of mental problems that he attributes to diet and nutrition really makes you stop and think about what John Grimmick was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing that it does is this. You know, I'm not saying that the wrong foods in your diet can cause a mental breakdown or severe depression or manic depression or an anxiety disorder or, you know, whatever. That's not what I'm saying. But I always emphasize the importance of the mental aspects of strength training.
Mm-hmm.
You have to involve the mind and the body. You have to link them together. And real physical culture involves the mind just as much as it involves the body. That's why in shows we've talked about visualization and concentration and focus and aggression, controlled aggression, and, you know, all of these things. Very important.
Yep.
If something that you are eating is affecting, for example, your ability to concentrate just by 5 or 10%, or if it is causing just a slight degree of anxiety or depression, or you're just not sleeping as soundly. Doesn't have to be a full-blown diagnosable mood disorder. A small degree of anything that affects your mind is going to adversely affect your training.
Yep.
And that is exactly what John Grimmick saw. And how he arrived at this, I have no idea, other than he had skinny young guys coming up to him for his entire life, desperately asking him how they could get bigger and stronger.
Yep.
And maybe after just talking to guys 5,000 or 10,000 times, he started to figure it out. I don't know. But that's the message that I'm trying to put out there. And I would really ask people to think carefully and logically and sensibly about what they put in their body.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I wrote Knife Fork Muscle, and that's one reason why in Knife Fork Muscle I'm not dogmatic about what your diet should be. And I recognize that different people are going to do better on different diets, and I recognize that over the course of your life, your ideal diet may change. Probably will.
Mm-hmm.
But I do give lots of information about things to consider, such as allergens in your diet, chemicals in your diet, sensitivities to allergenic foods and to chemicals. And I try to give people a sense of think through these issues and make up your own mind. And do not blindly adopt the gallon of milk a day thing simply because someone that you know and respect advocates it. Don't go out and mix up the Get Big drink because John McCollum wrote about it in an article in Strength and Health in his Keys to Progress series.
Yep.
Don't do that just because you think John McCollum was the greatest writer in the history of the Iron Game. He was a wonderful writer. Some of his articles are among the best ever.
Mm-hmm.
He has some terrific training programs. But that doesn't mean that everything that he wrote is something that you should follow. Bob Hoffman, wonderful man. I respect him enormously. And from the mid-1950s onward, he pushed soy-based protein powder like it was going out of style. He was wrong. Flat out wrong. That doesn't mean that I dismiss everything that the man said or did, or that I can't look to all of the good things that he did. But I can tell you, don't go the soy-based protein powder path.
No.
Even if you like Bob Hoffman.
Hey, Brooks, I'll tell you what this show does for me. I want to go turn on Jeremiah Johnson.
Yeah.
And I want to go out in the woods and live and hunt my food, live in a log cabin and lift rocks and be left alone. You know what I mean? It's like go and live the good, hardy life, man. That's what life is waiting there for you. Go seize it. That's how there's a lot to living rugged. Remember, I know we got to wind up, but this reminds me of, I'm going to go back to one our favorites, Rocky III, when he's challenged by Clubber Lang there in front of his wife, and Mickey leaves, and he's packing up at the house when Rocky comes in, and he wants to know why he's doing it, and he says to him, "You can't win, Rock. This guy'll eat you alive within 3 rounds." And it's like, he's like every other fighter. And he goes, "No, he's not like every other fighter. He's a wrecking machine." And when they sit down and he convinces him to one more fight with Lang, this is where I get into when I made that comment about Jeremiah Johnson. He said, the worst thing happened to you, Rock. He said, you became civilized. And sometimes when you become civilized, you lose the edge. And what we're talking about today, to me, with everything you've offered here, is to me, you're getting back your edge. It's like you're learning how to eat properly again. You feel younger. You feel stronger. You feel vital again. That all goes with all that. And then we talk about the best thing that I think was ever created in the universe, our favorite, physical culture. Go out there and push that iron as hard as you can. Eat properly and let the rest come as it is. I mean, I guess I'll say get your edge back. So that's kind of like how I'd sum it up for me with this show.
Yeah, the show in some ways may leave people thinking, well, okay, you've talked about what not to eat,
yep,
or what not to eat to excess.
Yep.
You haven't covered what to eat. Well, we'll have to do another show that talks about that. But
next week, do that next week if you want. I mean, I go ahead, but I mean, well, that's not a problem.
We can do that, but you know, the first step to understanding is to think very carefully about what you've been told about what you should eat, supposedly,
yep,
and to really give it some critical thinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what will open the door to the next step, which is something, you know, we certainly can cover in another show and should cover. It's the same with training. Most people start out doing it flat out wrong.
Yep.
They're stuck in the Muscle Magazine fantasy world. They have to get out of it. And the only way that happens is you make mistakes.
Yep.
And eventually you start paying attention, usually reading something where someone flat out says everything you were doing does not stand up to critical thinking. And that's when everything changes and you can start doing smart stuff and move ahead from there. So,
you know, Brooks, so there's one thing.
What's that?
Thank God for you guys. And, you know, I mean, I'm coming up the trail too. I'm glad, you know, we've all paid in one way or another, but you know something, look at what the mistakes at where we are now today because of it and learn from it. I know not everybody does, but the guys that are still hanging around, still productive, and you know, you laid the train tracks in the mid-90s. I mean, you know, through your books, through Hard Gainer, all that, you know, how I discovered you. We all know that. But the thing is, you know, whatever you want to call it, our mistakes are things where we screwed up and figured it out. Thank God in a lot of ways that did happen, because you know what? You and I wouldn't be sitting here talking right now, and there's a lot of people, when they hear this podcast, they're going to say, you know what? I'm glad those guys are around, or I'm glad I learned something today, or I'm glad I'm going to go out now and implement something, or, you know, by the way, I did the same thing they did, and I came up with the same thing at the end. So I think with this show today especially, I give thanks to all the people ahead of me, you know, the Grimmicks, you guys, all of you, that, you know, due to whether we want to call it errors or mistakes or whatever, look what we've talked about and learned here today.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And, you know, the thing for people to do is to approach these issues with an open mind, give it some critical thought.
Yep.
And when you get to the point where you're starting to get the answers worked out, that's the point where you need to pass the information on to the younger generation.
Yep.
And get as many people under the tent as possible. Physical culture is a wonderful thing. It's one of the best things that you can do in your entire life, one of the things that you do for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an absolute shame. It just is terrible. It's a tragedy that so many people get bad advice and they do things wrong and they don't make the gains or the progress that they deserve to make. And you know, that's a battle that all of us need to fight. So thanks for letting me on the show today and, you know, letting me continue to swing hard for the good guys.
Well, hey, I've told you, you can come on as much as you want. Brooks, why don't you just, you know, give your website or anything you want to give. I'll give mine and we'll sign off for today.
Sure. The website is brookscubic.com. That's BROOKSKUBIK, brookscubic.com. The new book on diet and nutrition is Knife, Fork, Muscle. It is printed. It is in stock. And as I said, we're shipping it on a 24-hour turnaround, meaning it's out the door within 24 hours from the time we get your order. Have a lot of other good books and courses and products, the new quarterly dinosaur files, and of course, for strength training information, dinosaur training, the book that started it all, strength, muscle, and power, chalk and sweat, my various training courses, dinosaur bodyweight training for those who like bodyweight training, dinosaur dumbbell training with a ton of dumbbell exercises and 50 different workouts that are dumbbell only or dumbbell in combination with other tools or with bodyweight training, and really good one for any older listeners, and by older I would say 35 and up, gray hair and black iron, which really gets into the nuts and bolts about strength training for the older trainee, and you won't go wrong with any of them.
Well, I hope when we all leave this world, we can take this to the next. Because I'd like to get better in the next life, if that's possible. So we'll see that. Obviously, this is Motivation and Muscle. And today, I want to thank Paul Becker and Earth Pulse Sleep On Command Systems for sponsoring the show. I've got the system, like I said in the beginning. I've had it 3 years. I couldn't recommend it more highly. You can go out on www.motivationandmuscle.com. Click the banner on the homepage, and it'll take you right through it. It's broken down, very easy to read, and very digestible. Then we have our main site, which is Fiorella Barbell Company. That's www.fiorellabarbellco.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. Please write a review. I mean, this show, like everyone with Brooks, is just killer. So, I mean, you know, tell us. And obviously, you can get a hold of me. I mean, I'll take the lump. It doesn't matter one way or the other. You get a hold of me at Fiorella Barbell at NICAP.RR.com. You can say whatever you want to me. I mean, don't be vulgar. But, you know, if you like the shows, fine. If you don't, I can take critical mass. It doesn't matter. You know, tell us what you like, what you don't like. If you like a certain show that Brooks and I could do for you, let us know. On Facebook, it's Fiorello Barbell, and it's Motivation and Muscle, and on Twitter, it's Fiorello Eric. I just seem to have more and more stuff to put on here, but I'll close off with that. So, Brooks, thanks again, man. Home run, knocked the skin off the ball today, as usual.
Thanks, Eric. It was my pleasure.
You're welcome anytime. So for Brooks Kubik, this is Eric Fiorello. Have a great weekend, and we will have this show up very shortly.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.